Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPod and MP3 player. Hello and welcome to The Drill Down, the podcast where we take a look at some of the week's most important events in tech and on the web and how they affect us all. I'm Andy Sarcini.
I'm Chris Bernor.
And we have with us as a very special guest, Tom Cheridar, who used to be a regular co-host on The Drill Down.
Andy, I'm going to assume that you're going to splice in some awesome music when you say that.
A fanfare, perhaps.
Obviously, yeah. It's good to be back.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you back, too. You're sitting in for both Devendra and Dwayne, who had some last-minute rescheduling that they had to do. Anyway, this week, Microsoft prepares to launch Windows 8 and Surface, but not before Apple steals their thunder with one more thing. And what protections can we expect when we decide to operate anonymously on the internet? But first, we occasionally like to do a segment on the show we call What We're Playing With, where we talk about the gadgets, apps, and tech that has obsessed us over the last week. And I wanted to talk about Black Mesa. I don't know if anybody is familiar with Black Mesa, but Black Mesa is essentially a homebrew recreation of the game Half-Life using the Source engine. Now, for those of you who are familiar with Half-Life and familiar with Source, you may realize that there is already a Source conversion of Half-Life called Half-Life Source. This is an official Steam conversion, but the people behind Black Mesa feel like that didn't fully live up to the potential of the Source engine. So they built this project from the ground up, and it's not just a simple port of Half-Life maps and models, but they've remade the storyline using the new polished Source engine with new models, new maps, new soundtracks, voice acting, and textures. So I decided to get in the Wayback Machine and try out this Black Mesa, this conversion. And I got just such a nostalgia rush playing the first couple levels of Half-Life, but with the new, you know, sort of amazing makeover that is Black Mesa. And it's not a complete... completely converted the game start to finish. In particular, the stuff that they've yet to convert is, and without too many spoilers for those who haven't played Half-Life, when your character leaves a planet Earth and basically goes to another planet, they haven't finished that part of the game. So, but other than that, I think they did a terrific job in up-resing all of the look of the entire game. It's not just an up-res, it's like a complete sort of...
Do you feel like it really works? Because the one thing that I always worry about when I see I've encountered a few sort of upgrades. Like there was the Real Mist that came out a few years ago, and then they did the upgrade of Ocarina of Time for the Master, the Master version. And like sometimes like it's the sort of old-fashionedness that's part of the nostalgia of it. And it's really hard to sort of, like, figure out how to redo an old game in a way that, like, captures the aspects of the game that were genuinely good and yet actually overcomes the things that were actually genuinely problematic about it. So you feel like it was able to sort of do both of those?
Yeah, well, fortunately, in this case... Like, the game mechanic itself hasn't changed, and I think necessarily they had to keep everything the way that it worked in the original game in order to make sure that the game plays the same. But it's basically just kind of like a visual makeover. But I think they did. I mean, I don't think they – it's not just a port. I mean, they really did from the ground up build everything from scratch to utilize the new Source engine. It looks gorgeous. I mean, if you like Half-Life, you want to get back into that world, we'll have the link in the show notes.
Okay. Does this mean there's going to be a redo of what was that video series? Half-Life, Full Life Consequences? Did you ever see that series?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that. That's pretty funny. The one where was it his brother, like Gordon?
Yeah, it was like some really dumpy like fan fiction that managed to get animated into it. Yeah, I'm hilarious to see that redone in high res.
Yeah, totally.
Just for the silliness factor of it. Anyway,
what do you got, Chris, for us this week?
Well, I have a rather minor and yet daily annoyance that I feel like will actually become substantially less of an annoyance. It seems like if you go on to the Apple iOS store, there are about 3,000 weather applications. And my belief after seeing most of them and exploring through that world is that most of them suck. There are the ones that are like so visually integrated that you can't see anything of actual value in the information. Mm-hmm. And then there's the minimalist ones, which show you so little information as to be hardly useful. And then there are the expensive ones, which nevertheless load slowly. I've been very unhappy with them overall. Gruber posted this afternoon in Daring Fireball about check. I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called because it's just called weather on there, but I think it's just called checkout weather. And it is one of the nicest weather apps I've seen on any phone thing ever. It has all the information you actually want, including like forecast and hourly forecast and maps, but yet is simple enough that it doesn't feel cluttered and everything. Hmm. And honestly, I know that weather applications are relatively simple, but for something that I literally check every single day, I really want to be able to get that information as quickly as possible and not have to worry about like having it load for 20 seconds while it, you know, updates all the other cities that I'm not in, or, you know, if go through three screens to find out, you know, what the hourly forecast is going to be.
It does look really slick. I'm looking at the site right now, and the screen images look really slick. And I noticed that it integrates with a service called Dark Sky for minute by minute precipitation forecast.
So, yeah, it has. That was a Kickstarter project, I believe, wasn't it? Dark Sky. I think it was. I'm nearly positive Dark Sky was a Kickstarter project. I remember seeing it. Yeah, it was a Kickstarter project. It's really one of the more amazing ones. They were basically doing like really advanced sort of weather, sort of cloud prediction and everything, which is pretty unusual to see in a minimalist app. I really like seeing the cloud cover, you know, because sometimes sometimes it's easier to just see like I'm right here, the clouds are moving like this. It's a much more granular sense of weather than you get from a simple prediction engine. But usually those features are in the super heavy apps that I can't stand because they take too much effort to use. Small thing, but I'm looking forward to having a slightly faster morning.
Tom, how about yourself? What have you been playing with this week?
I know when I say presidential debate, no one listening is cringing.
Uh-huh.
At all. But this is actually a pretty cool gadget, especially if you want to watch the debate, but are, you know, you need something to kind of, it's painful. It's really painful. I watched all the debates now, even the vice presidential debate. That one was okay because I think that they weren't expecting much from it. So we actually it wasn't as cringeworthy. It was kind of fun. Uh-huh. It was a nice... It was a nice performance, if you will. So Yahoo's got their own app called Play On. Play On something else. Into Now has got a feature called Cap It. So any live program, you can basically let it listen. It's kind of like Shazam, and it'll pop up and it'll check you in. The other thing that it does that's cool is Cap It will capture screenshots from all of the live broadcasts, and you can go in, grab one of those screenshots, and automatically put a caption on it and turn it into like an instant meme, and then drops it into a stream. I put one on there. Which I thought was great, and I tweeted out with caption. Like, I really agree with what Romney is saying right now, and it was just an image of him with his hands in the air, kind of coming down, you know, because people do hand motions. And I was like, this is how you play the piano. Which I agree with him completely. It is exactly how you would play the piano in the air. But you can kind of see how it would – it kind of both degrades and enhances your viewing experience. Degrades the, I guess, the public discourse because we're not taking it seriously. But if you're taking the public presidential debates rather seriously for actually getting information out of it, you should – think about it again. Anyways, that's my gadget thing that I've been playing with. That was cool.
So basically, like a meme creator. Mm-hmm. That's interesting that Yahoo is jumping into that.
Oh, it's such a good app too.
Well, if you think about it, those are relatively lucrative. I mean, I feel like that's sort of this year's version of. Remember a few years ago when we were all concerned about the sort of content farms, like associated content and everything. Mm-hmm. You know. Meme generators generate a huge number of page views.
Absolutely.
And people have literally it's everyone's guilty pleasure on the internet. Even exactly. You know, I've blocked the default subreddits so that I never have to see them when I go on, but occasionally I get logged out or I have to open up an incognito window and then I'm in Reddit and then I, you know, go into Quick Meme and it's an hour lost instantly.
Yeah. I definitely like it because it's kind of in the same vein of a GetGlue or a Miso. I know Andy and I were into Miso.com, GoMiso.com a lot back when it was just starting. These check-in apps for shows, but the Cap It feature really brings you back because you can only actually do the meme captures when it's a live broadcast. So it's like. It's kind of a brilliant way to get people to enhance the live performance of something, and you know, kind of allow you to participate with it. So you can do that for any show. But anyways,
All right, let's talk about some of the headlines this week. We've learned a lot about Microsoft's upcoming offerings. Newegg earlier this week let slip pricing and packages for the upcoming Windows 8. Windows 8 Professional upgrade is going to be $69. Windows 8 Pro Pack is $69 as well. Windows 8 OEM, $99. And Windows 8 Professional is $139, with those last two being available in both 32 and 64-bit versions. And Microsoft has also released their first official Windows 8 commercial. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It reminded me a bit of something that Apple might put out.
Microsoft has definitely realized in the last few years that they did not have a design sense.
Yeah.
And really have, you know, clearly hired some very talented designers and graphic artists and, you know, people to sort of really sort of promote a Microsoft feel. I don't know. It feels like a modern Windows commercial to me. It feels like in the vein of the sort of what was that one? The I'm a Windows PC or the what was the other recent one that was?
Yeah,
you know, it was my idea. And it was sort of the idea that while Mac might be for the hippies, Microsoft is for everybody. And Microsoft, you know, it's a very deliberately, you know, extremely diverse set of not just people, but even situations they're in. These are not people, you know, necessarily in their, you know, perfect 1950s Mies van der Rohe house living room.
There was something about that as well that I noticed in this Windows 8 commercial is that there was a certain sense of whimsy that you don't typically see in an Apple device commercial outside of, say, the iPod. You know, the iPod, I think, that has had plenty of whimsy in there. Commercial ads, but typically they focus on the strengths of the device. And this one was like a lot of people. I'm not confusing it with the. This is the one where they kept repeating 8 is coming, and you'd see a lot of the basically the repetition of the phrase and a lot of images associated with how wonderful 8 was going to be. And people basically using it in their lifestyle environments. And we'll also talk about the new commercial for the Surface too in a minute. But yeah, I just noticed that it had a sense of whimsy about it that you don't normally see. Microsoft Surface RT has finally been priced. I know that was one of the things that we were sort of wondering, one of the last questions to be answered about the Microsoft Surface for a while. 32 gig version of the RT is going to be priced for $499 without the touch cover, $599 with, and 64 gig version of the device is going to go for $699. And once again, they have launched their first new ad as well, and that ad, like the Windows 8 ad, is full of whimsy too. It's basically a bunch of people. It's showing off that that magnetic click keyboard, where they have a bunch of people essentially clicking the keyboard onto the screen and showing how versatile it is with that. I mean, I think they feel that's their strong suit with this device, and I wouldn't disagree. What did you guys think about this price point?
It's not really, in my opinion, that exciting, but at the same time, it's certainly not a mistake either. I think there was a lot of worry that they were going to make the mistake that so many other early tablet competitors made and came out, you know, with a very nice device, which was just priced above what anyone was going to be able to get. I mean, like the Motorola Zoom, which was what, $600 or $700 for basically less than the lowest iPad could get. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think there was some hope that it was going to be substantially lower, like an aggressive pricing structure that would really undercut the iPod or the iPad. But I think that, you know, it certainly wasn't the wrong price.
Yeah. You want to know why? I think that they went with a higher price and stocked the hardware and didn't. I don't know how much they're making. Obviously, no one does at this point. I would assume this is not a loss leader for any reason. That they do intend to make money on this from a few different points, but also on the hardware as well as the software and apps and that. No one's really made light of this, but Microsoft already has a low price tablet. It's just not actually theirs, and it's the Nook. They just started it and closed their new partnership with Barnes & Noble called Nook Media. And it's kind of the same deal they did with Nokia and their phones. They're baiting a company in. They're paying for the development. And I would assume eventually they're going to make the hop from Android-based tablets to Windows-based tablets, cheaper versions anyway, and it's their $200 tablet. And if they want to buy it because it's a very successful business, they have the option to at a very probably a very low price because they're already kind of in. That's kind of the way that they can have their cake and eat it too, I guess.
It's sort of clear that they really want to position this as a high-end device. I mean, you can actually charge too little for a device. Like, if the market sort of, defines high-end tablets as being priced around this point, Microsoft really wants this to be seen as a high-end device that can compete with Apple. And I don't know, maybe not, but I really feel like they're trying to position it that way. And wanted to ensure that it was actually going to be priced so it wouldn't eat into their low-end tablets and it wouldn't be too expensive either.
The Surface is expected to be available on October 26th along with Windows 8. And this week, Apple announced that they're going to be holding a special event on October 23rd. So take that, Microsoft, for stealing their thunder. And the event is expected to be their unveiling of a smaller form factor iPad. Now, 9to5 Mac received a list of iPad SKUs that shows that Apple could be set to launch 24 different models of the new device That includes the various storage sizes and black and white colors. But there's also rumors that there, along with all that, there might be a updated iPad 3 with a Lightning connector. So it looks like Apple's going to jump in there just under the wire, and we'll be talking about the iPad Mini before we talk about the Surface again. any comments, any thoughts about iPad, the upcoming iPad Mini, or the possible iPad 3 with the Lightning connector?
I'd be a little bit surprised if they do the Lightning connector. I mean, I don't know. I don't have any inside knowledge at all on this. It just, Apple seems, I can't think of any place before where Apple has done a update with a product that sort of changed some fundamental aspect of the product without sort of updating the name and all sorts of other things about it. I'd be kind of surprised if they did that. But yeah, it seems extremely clear at this point that there's going to be a 7-inch iPad, and it's going to come out on October 23rd. So it'll be exciting to see that. I don't know. I don't understand entirely why people get so excited about the Apple events. I mean, it's always cool, and Apple always does awesome stuff, and they're great products. But at the same time, like, they're going to come out with something shiny and modernist.
I think at this point, they're kind of riding on momentum from the past years when Apple product launches were huge, secretive events that revolutionized the electronic world with, like, the iPhone 1 when that first came out. So I think we're still riding on that momentum and the Steve Jobs reality distortion field momentum. Mm-hmm. All right, so our last headline here before we get into our main topic. Any of you guys watch Saturday Night Live last week?
No, I did not.
Oh. Well, yes. You missed... Tom, did you get a chance to watch it?
No, I didn't get to see it.
So you missed this terrific sketch where they had tech reporters come on to an interview program, and all of them had complaints about the new iPhone. And there were all these little whiny little complaints about, like, maps or the purplish hue when you're taking a picture of the sun. And then the host of the show confronted the tech reporters and said, why don't you direct your complaints directly to the Chinese workers who have built your iPhone? And all of a sudden... Everyone got a little sheepish and kind of ashamed of their first world problems. I actually have a little clip from this this sketch. Let's take a listen to this.
So, Mr. Chow, Josh here was just complaining about Apple Maps.
It wasn't really a complaint.
Oh no! Talk about Apple Map. It no work, right? It take you to wrong place. You want Starbucks to take you to Dunkin' Donut? That must be so hard for you.
Oh yeah. You want Macy? It take you to JCPenney? Oh, how you deal with that?
Oh, I guess we just lucky. You know, we don't need map. You know, because we sleep where we work. Yeah. Oh, but thank you for pointing out problem.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
And you guys were complaining a lot about the apps, right? That they were loading too slow?
No, not at all.
They're wonderful.
Oh, your apps run too slow? You can't play Angry Bird? Yeah, I have an Angry Bird too. A chicken at factory tried to steal my lunch.
Oh, Twitter no slow? You can't read Kardashian tweet about handbag? My brother have handbag too. He lose hand, keep him back until he can afford to reattach.
So, anyway, there... Just a little clip there. Do you think that maybe we're too whiny about the little inconveniences about our tech products?
I don't know. I think that there's like a scaling issue. I mean, it's yes. I came up with there was a Hacker News thing recently. I think it was complaining about something, and one of the top voted comments was about sort of putting things in perspective. But it's like, I mean, that is sort of the human condition. Like, the most painful pain is the pain that we're currently feeling. You know, if you are annoyed by your maps, then that's currently the most thing that you're most, you know, interested in. I mean, and obviously, you know, most, I don't know, I just think it's kind of a in poor taste, almost rhetorical device to come back at people who complain about that, because, like, I think that usually when that argument is made, like, it's not out of a genuine concern for the Chinese factory workers. It's sort of more of a, like, twist point. And furthermore, there's the, you know, there's this sort of thing that happens with sort of third world, not third world, because developing world manufacturing, where, you know, oftentimes, like, the factory jobs are substantially better than the rural, you know, slaving away in a rice paddy jobs. It's just that we don't normally think about people slaving away in rice paddies because they don't touch our world. But right. As soon as they touch our world, then we sort of come in and look at it. And that's not to say that we shouldn't be in favor of better working conditions. It's just, like, we need to understand, like, the sort of place that it happens within the industrialization sort of timeline. That being said, I actually am increasing of the opinion that there really is a substantial problem with the maps application. even in Silicon Valley and Apple's backyard, it is a substantially. I was looking for our new offices, which are in the AOL building, and I did a search for AOL and found some place in, like, Berkeley as the top result, and I was just like, "What?"
Right. I mean, I could not find. I still cannot to this day find my home on Apple Maps. Like, if I try to do a GPS and I give it the address to my home, it tells me that the location cannot be found. So, it's an interesting problem to have. Like, it's weird because if I'm near it, it tells me the location can't be found. If I'm far away from it, it can find it. So it's like it cannot locate it when I'm physically near my home. I have to go away from my home in order for it to find my home. It's a strange situation.
That is odd.
Let's take a break. But before we take a break, I want to talk a little bit about our sponsor, Audible.com. For the listeners of the Drill Down podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download for you to try out their service, plus a free 30-day trial. And the book that I want to recommend this week is called Roadside Picnic, and it's by Arkady Strugatsy and Boris Strugatsy. And Roadside Picnic is the basis for both the 1979 Andrei Tarkovsky science fiction film Stalker and the 2007 video game Stalker: Shadow of Chernobyl. It's basically about an area in Russia that aliens have once landed and left all of their detritus behind, and then have taken off. And since then, the zone is littered with what to the aliens would have been the equivalent of scraps of paper and napkins and empty beer cans, but to us take on these kind of weird supernatural properties that alter our physical environment. And it's about a guy whose job it is to, so they cordon off the entire area, and this one guy's job is to go in and sort of retrieve those artifacts illegally, and turn around and sell them for on the black market. It's a fascinating book, and it's a short read. I think it's not that long, actually. And it's if you're a fan of either the video game or the movie, I highly recommend going straight to the source and checking out this book. That's Roadside Picnic by Arkady Strugatsy and Boris Strugatsy. And that book, or any of Audible's other 10,000 plus titles, can be yours. All you have to do is download to download that audiobook. Even if you don't like the service, at the end of that 30-day trial, you can keep that book for free. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown for that free audiobook. And going to that site helps our show out. So please feel free to do that when you're starting your new Audible account. All right, we're going to take a little break here, listen to some music. And when we come back, we're going to talk about internet anonymity and how you are affected by it. Do you actually have anonymity on the internet that is protected in any sort of way? So take a listen to this and come on back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Drill Down on Geeks of Doom, the roundtable podcast where we take a look at the best in tech and social media and how it affects us. I'm here with Christopher Bernor and Tom Cheridar. And before we get into this, I have to begin with a little background for the unfamiliar. So Reddit.com is the social networking site where users can create forums known as subreddits dedicated to topics reflecting their interests, such as news, politics, movies, etc. Because the site operates with a minimum paid staff, administrators allow the users themselves to moderate these subreddits. On October 12th, Gawker.com's Adrian Chen published an article called "Unmasking Reddit's Violent Acres, the Biggest Troll on the Web." To its credit, the article paints a mostly fair and balanced portrait of a user on Reddit known as Violent Acres, known only by that username, and one who chose to keep his offline identity anonymous. Violent Acres moderated several subreddits dedicated to questionable content such as Jailbait, which showcases photos of underage girls mostly taken from their Facebook profiles, and Creepshots, which featured covert photos taken by users of unsuspecting women. These subreddits, creepy as they may seem, were yet allowed to exist under Reddit's terms of use, under the proviso that no individual identifiable information on either the users or their subjects be published. This is a cardinal rule of Reddit membership, the violation of which is one of the few punishable by banning from the site. This rule exists not only to protect creepy voyeurs, such as the contributors to Creepshots, but also victims of rape and abuse, the gay and lesbian community, medical marijuana users, whistleblowers, basically anyone who wants to tell their story on Reddit without fear of persecution. Chen's article also focused on Violent Acres' vast contribution to the Reddit community through his moderation of hundreds of other mainstream, non-questionable subreddits, stepping in where necessary to remove spam and keep those subreddits in check. In the article, Chen painted the uneasy yet tolerated relationship that Reddit's admins had with Violent Acres because of that community involvement. Now, let me preface this by saying that the opinions expressed here are mine alone. I can't speak for my co-hosts, and I have plenty of opportunity to speak for themselves. My qualms with the article have nothing to do with Violent Acres' online behavior, which I neither condone nor defend, and in fact, I feel his behavior bears little relevance to this discussion. It's what Mr. Chen decided to do within the article that I found questionable. As published, Chen's article would have stood as an excellent in-depth portrait of a controversial, both reviled and necessary member of the Reddit community without the need to reveal his offline identity, yet that's exactly what Chen did, for no apparent reason other than to bring the ire of the internet to his doorstep. Chen says that it was this very podcast, The Drill Down, in an interview I held in March of this year with Violent Acres and two other top Reddit users, that provided the missing link he used to connect the voice of Violent Acres to the voice of the person behind the identity, Michael Bruch. In preparing for that interview, one of the agreements that was made was that I not reveal the identities behind the users I was interviewing, and in fact, I had no knowledge of Mr. Bruch's real identity until the Gawker article. As a result of the article, Mr. Bruch has been fired from his place of employment, and Reddit moderators, outraged by the violation of anonymity on the site, have chosen to ban Gawker articles from appearing on the site. Regardless of what one thinks about Mr. Bruch or his activities, revealing his personal information without his permission is tantamount to vigilantism, an internet lynch mob, and I'm ashamed that this program was used to that end. It'd be no different than if somebody were to release to Adrian Chen's detractors his phone number, his home address, where his kids go to school. In one action, Mr. Chen decided that he would be the judge to hand down the sentence and determine the fate of Mr. Bruch's future, and the most shameful part, he rationalized it in the name of journalism. Kevin Morris at the Daily Dot writes, "At web communities like Reddit, which thrive because users are free to say and do anything they want, doxing, the revealing of a pseudonymous internet user's real-world identity, is a severe crime both to users and the site staff. It's far worse than offensive speech like racism and homophobia, or yes, even posting surreptitiously snapped photos of innocent women for creeps to perv over. Why? Because doxing undermines the community's structural integrity. Reddit simply would not exist as we know it if users weren't operating under the freedom of a flexible identity." Mr. Chen says in his article, "Under Reddit logic, outing Violent Acres is worse than anonymously posting creep shots of innocent women, because doing so would undermine Reddit's role as a safe place for people to anonymously post creep shots of innocent women. I'm okay with that," he says. I wonder, well, Mr. Chen was deciding he was okay with undermining Reddit's role as a safe place for people to anonymously post creep shots of innocent women, if he was also okay with undermining Reddit's role as a safe place for the other aforementioned groups whom also use the protection of Reddit's anonymity to tell their stories. I had a brief follow-up conversation with Mr. Bruch in preparation for this podcast tonight, wherein I asked him, "Did you specifically ask Mr. Chen not to publish your personal information, or did you give him permission to do so?" To which he responded, "I begged him not to publish my name or photo. In IM, he stated his intent was to destroy my life." I'm compelled to ask Mr. Chen, what aspect of objective journalistic responsibility does that fall under? To sum it up, Lawblog Pope Hat says it best. Put it another way, in a fight between Frick and Frack, we can recognize that Frick is an asshole without diminishing our ability to recognize that Frack is an asshole. Is Gawker hypocritical when it expresses outrage against creepers? Yes, Gawker is, in fact, full of people who are relentlessly creepifying about women and kids and sex. Our ability to recognize that is not diminished by recognizing and calling out that Reddit has bustling pedophile, creeper, and bigot communities worthy of contempt. We can think both things at once. Let me put it this way. I would not let the moderators and fans of the Reddit creeper forums around my daughters. I'd worry they would sexually assault the girls. I don't worry about Gawker writers and editors molesting my girls. However, if my girls were molested, I'd expect Gawker writers and editors to try and find ways to monetize it, use it to drive traffic, come up with banal, weakly, ironic, hipster douchebag quips about it, pay witnesses to offer lurid details about it, and try to find clumsy and demi-literate ways to connect it to politicians they don't like. All right. Now that I've gotten that off my chest, what do you guys think about this situation?
Well, actually, Andy, I thought you were going to go a completely different way about that. Because when we had talked about this before the show, I actually called Andy when this happened and informed him of what Gawker was about to do, and the fact that they had actually published the article. So I got him before he actually read the Gawker post, quoted him, and wrote a story about it. In my take, for anyone who's interested, mm-hmm. check it out at MetroBeat.
We've got the link in the show notes.
I basically summarized the position, which was Gawker is, you know, at odds with Reddit moderator, different than actually Reddit. Now, Gawker is actually not at all popular on that site. Most people hate it, even the good stuff. And there are some really good pieces of content on Gawker. They're just, they've developed such a relationship, a reputation rather, that, you know, a lot of people don't want to stop. You know, it's the same thing with anybody. You know, somebody who cries wolf a million times and then has some, you know, legitimate claim to panic, and you don't want to listen to him. You've just decided that he's full of shit. I understand that that's kind of where everyone stands. So when Reddit moderators decided they're outing one of our own and his personal identity and everything that comes along with outing someone's personal identity, we need to take action by banning all Gawker content from each of our subreddits. Not every single moderator probably agrees with this, and not every single subreddit is participating. I think this is entirely hypocritical, and I said so in my piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is. It's ridiculous. Mr. Bruce is the one that was careless with his identity. If he didn't want his personal identity out in the open, he should have been more careful. Why are we going to get mad at Adrian Chen for doing his homework? I mean, he played journalist. He doesn't. He's working for an organization that everybody does not respect, especially in the Reddit community. So he's got something against him right there. But how are you going to get mad at him for basically doing his job? Like, you know, outing him is a personal call that other journalists have decided not to do because they didn't feel like it was necessary. Given of what he does and how important his relationship was to the early Reddit community or the early Reddit staffers when they were only four people, I think that he had plenty of claim to go ahead and publish his name. He did all of his homework. He busted his ass. He wrote a really good humanizing piece. He did not demonize this dude. He didn't set him up as a pedophile who you know, gets away with murder and trolls the hell out of everyone. You know, he really made him seem like a human being and really played to his tragedies. But at the end, and this is the part I love, he quoted him as saying, "What are you going to miss most about Reddit? I miss posting porn." Because that's kind of the way that that's the impression that he got of this dude. Like, yes, you are a pillar of justice on Reddit. You keep it clean and legal, while still managing to rile up the community and, you know, be racist and borderline on what's, you know, should be considered tendencies of a pedophile, all of these things. And what the hell, man? Why not put his name out there? He did it. If he didn't, why are we getting mad at Reddit? Andy, why are you mad at Reddit?
I'm not mad at Reddit at all. No, I'm upset with Adrian Chen.
Why are you mad at Adrian Chen?
He violated a sense of journalistic responsibility. I mean, there's really no good reason to reveal this person's identity in this article.
Why not? I've read a million of these articles.
Yeah,
like a bunch of. I went on yours, and I think this is funny, and I think it's a credit to Chen's article, and I think I said this in the first draft of my post. It's credit to his reporting that you had Mr. Bruce on the air talking about his deeds, his past, and his Reddit career, if you will. It was a bunch of my friends and my coworkers who did this, and I didn't even know. And here's why. I didn't know his name, and so I kind of just glossed it over. Like, you had him on air, and there's something that's like, if you don't have his name, if you're not making him a real person, which is all these other articles, he was just this figment of imagination that I, you know, he exists, but he doesn't. For all I know, he could be five people, you know?
Yeah.
For all I know, he could be completely the opposite of what he is. Now he's a human being. Now he's real. Now I actually want to know what's going on, why he did this, and what the deal is, you know?
Yeah, but he was a human being before. He was a human being when I interviewed him. It was clear that he wasn't.
When I was reading it before, Andy, that's what I'm trying to get you to see. To the viewing public, he was just a name. He was just Violent Acres. I don't give a shit about Violent Acres. Nope. The same thing happened to me when I would post under Geeks of Doom as Tech Gonzo.
Yeah, yeah. See, now I think we're the idea.
Dude, why do you keep using that name? It's ridiculous. And it made me think, like, no, you know, when the trolls would come after me, it's so much easier to go after a dude named Tech Gonzo. It's so much harder if you've got your real name on it. See, now they have to confront that somebody's actually done the research, they're proud of it, and they want to stick their ass on the line.
Well, see,
he was proud of so much shit that he did that it overshadowed all the good.
The fundamental issue here is about the right to internet anonymity. If he chose to be anonymous, it was for a reason, whatever the reason was. And it wasn't just him, you know, like the other people that I interviewed that evening all had their internet aliases, and they all chose for one reason or another not to reveal their true identity. Yeah. And the question is, if you, in particular in the case with this article, if you state that you don't want to reveal your identity, what right does somebody else have to violate that?
I would say that if they went and they stole information from a place that you did not consent, they have zero right whatsoever. If they were looking in public sources and through confidential sources backed up many times over, including a public broadcast with your voice on air,
yeah.
to verify. I mean, if you think about it, the drill down was kind of instrumental in making sure Chen felt secure enough to go on record saying, this is this dude, I'm going to call him, and I'm going to go on record saying, this is him.
But why? The question is, why did he need to? Because he painted the content of his article is fantastic. It paints this.
Well,
this
I told
fortune.
You why. If I don't know who it is, it's just some dude who is on the internet that I don't care about. He's just a name. He's just Violent Acres is just a thing. I don't know what that is. I know for a fact he's a real person.
I said,
it would have been really easy to just out Mr. Bruch as Violent Acres, summarize in two or three paragraphs all the awful crap that he's done and how Anderson Cooper outed him, and then turn it back on Reddit for working with him. He could have done this in four paragraphs.
What do you think, Chris?
Anderson Cooper called out Jailbait, and
I remember that story.
That's kind of where Reddit split and said, "Look, we appreciate that you have helped us police the site in the past to keep it, you know, on the verge of being illegal and legal while maintaining versus, but we're done. You know, it's just too much." And I get why. It's because they started getting money and it didn't work. You know, it's like, it's too hot an issue. We don't want to mess with it. And nobody wants to moderate that. Nobody wants that job. And they don't want to give somebody that doesn't work for them that job.
Yeah. So I kind of want to step in here with sort of an orthogonal take on this, sort of the steps back. So, I recently finished reading a really, really, really wonderful book by Bruce Schneier called Liars and Outliers, which is essentially Schneier, who's a fairly substantial member of the security community, applying game theory and security sort of principles to society at large. And he sort of identifies four ways that society organizes itself. One is obviously security, but then within like groups, there are like moral pressures, social pressures, and then institutional pressures as scale up way of enforcing certain levels of action. And I sort of feel like what's happening here is sort of a cross between two of those levels, and I think that's why the issue ends up becoming controversial, because Adrian's supporters seem to feel that he is exerting social pressure on Reddit and the Reddit community and Violent Acres in particular to stop doing what he considers to be a problematic behavior, and Reddit as an institution and essentially the government of the Reddit site, you know, is sticking to its principles as an institutional entity that has certain rules about its thing and sort of how its community runs. I mean, I'm sort of both opinions on this. Like, I feel like free speech is not free speech unless there is freedom to unless people can say things that actually offend us. Like, if free speech only means people say things that don't offend us, and as soon as people say things that do offend us, we want to clamp down on that, that's not a real free speech. And yet at the same time, like, we exert social pressures on speech that we don't like all the time. I mean, if one of my friends start spewing, you know, racially, you know, hateful speech, I'm going to stop hanging out with him, and I'm probably going to tell people, don't hang out with him, he's a racist. Which is obviously far less than, you know, outing an anonymous person, but I feel like it is an example of this sort of social pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, because of – or fortunately, depending on your position, like, because of Gawker's, like, reach, his individual ability to find out Violent Acres' true identity and spread that is far more than you or I could. Well, maybe not you, Andy, but me, as just sort of a random person on the internet. Mm-hmm. Which definitely sort of magnifies the effect of his social pressure far more than most people. I don't know. It's sort of a – I guess there's also I think something going on here where I feel like subtly Adrian is essentially making the argument that although not tested in a court of law, some of the stuff that Violent Acres was doing was – borderline, if not actually illegal, just simply not enforceable. Whereas Reddit obviously is making the argument implicitly that it wasn't, which I think is another sort of interesting take on it that I think sort of explains some of the sort of dumbfounding that we get between, you know, both the supporters of Gawker and the supporters of the Reddit community. Because a lot of it really depends on, you know, exactly how one interprets essentially the legality of essentially unenforceable crimes. Like, you know, if I, you know, go and take surreptitious pictures of, you know, my neighbors, then I can get arrested as a peeping Tom and, you know, whatever violation that is. On the other hand, if you just simply have a picture where clearly something was taken, but you're never going to find out who happens, then clearly some crime has been committed and yet we have no ability to ever enforce it. So there's sort of a question about exactly, like, how does one handle that? And what is the role of somebody who distributes that versus simply takes it? I don't know. And I don't have any answers to this. I'm just sort of like trying to step back and think about how to even approach this and why it has become sort of such a big issue. And the only other thing I want to say is I agree with you, Tom. I do think it is very hypocritical of Reddit to ban Gawker in the name of free speech.
Well, no, Reddit themselves are not the Reddit.
Well, for the moderators yeah, to ban it, which I guess, although it is in a sense a form of social pressure back. If we're going to take my analysis,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that my exact words for the moderators that did this were that they are exactly what they hate the most, which is a group of sociopathic hypocrites who can justify silencing a few awful voices for what they believe is the greater good of the entire community. That's no different than what they fight against, where they defend their buddy. I could see if they were like, look, we're just going to delete any mention of this article on our subreddits because it has to do with doxing, and that's how we're going to handle it. But to say we're done with all Gawker everywhere and we're just going to punish them, it's like you guys are. I got to bring up the Alan Moore killing joke. I got to do it.
Okay.
Batman and the Joker essentially are the same person. Reddit moderators are exactly what they hate the most.
Just to clarify, like, my position, like, I don't care if it had been one Reddit user who had doxed another Reddit user, be it Violent Acres or anyone else, and Adrian Chen was reporting on that incident, I would feel that he would have fulfilled his journalistic duties in being an objective observer and reporting the facts. But the fact that he stepped in and...
he was essentially making news.
He was making news, right. And I'm sorry, Tom, he wasn't doing it to humanize him. He was doing it to...
You can say what you want, but it's like I went to journalism school, Andy, and I know when I see a piece that is – you wouldn't write almost a 5,000-word article on somebody if you were just going to slam them and out their name. Like if you're going to do something as big as something that's potentially going to get someone fired over, but you feel impassioned that they've done something and they've had an impact big enough that warrants – you going clean with this information, you have to do it justice. Like it's in every single like journalism class I've ever had.
But
it's like if you're going to do this, you better do it justice. You better make a really good claim. You better write a hell of a piece that does it justice. And that he did. He did absolutely everything.
But he should have known what the result of his actions would have been.
Did.
I think that was a lack of responsibility on his part.
See, here's the thing that I just don't buy. Violent Craze is I don't when I put Adrian Chen and Violent Acres together, I don't see them as the same credible dudes. I don't, because one of them has been on record and you can source and you can find out everything that they've ever done. You can. The other one has lied and trolled and done everything in his power sloppily to keep his name out of the media and the press. I don't see them as the same. So he tells me that Adrian Chen called told him in instant message that he just wants to,
that he stated his intent was to destroy his life.
Yeah, that's to me. I'm sorry. I'm gonna call bullshit on it.
All right,
I'm gonna say that's not true. I don't think anyone who is in a profession and calls themselves a journalist would absolutely do that ever.
But let us suppose for an instance that was true. Does that change your opinion on Adrian Chen's actions in this situation?
I mean, I don't really think we can do that. I don't think we can say, is it true or isn't. I'm telling
you're
you.
Just, you're saying right out
right
that
now,
you're saying you're.
That's not the case.
You're saying that Violent Acres' claim is not true.
I don't think it's true, and well, I don't think that we should debate it as, is it going to change my opinion of Adrian Chen's
I'm just saying, you're passing
no,
judgment
that
on.
Was never his, I don't think that that's his intent. You don't write a 5,000-word article on somebody. Yeah.
Isn't there a parallel here to the outing of Deep Throat, the Watergate informant? I'm trying to remember my history, but it seems like a similar parallel.
Right. In that instance,
somebody who was very controversial and yet very important, and yet who nobody knew who it was.
Sure. Not for decades.
Yeah.
Until after the fact, and I think I don't recall the I don't want to speak to fact without the facts in front of me, but I think that the source himself, that Deep Throat himself, eventually admitted that it was him.
Yeah, I'm checking on.
But let me change the subject a little here and veer off to a similar situation here, and this is courtesy of an article in the Wall Street Journal called When the Most Personal Secrets Get Outed on Facebook. And it involves a young woman named Bobby Duncan who desperately wanted her father not to know she was a lesbian. And one evening last fall, the president of the Queer Chorus, a choir group she had recently joined, inadvertently exposed her sexuality to nearly 200 Facebook friends, including her father, by adding her to a Facebook discussion group. As a result, her father left vitriolic messages on her phone demanding that she renounce same-sex relationships and threatening to sever family ties. Soon she learned another choir member had been outed the very same way, upsetting his world as well. The president of the chorus, a student organization at the University of Texas, had added both of them to the choir's Facebook group, and the president of the chorus did not know that Facebook would automatically tell their friends that they were now members of the chorus. The two students were casualties of a privacy loophole on Facebook, the fact that anyone can be added to a group by a friend without their approval. As a result, the two lost control over their secrets, even though both were sophisticated users who had attempted to use Facebook's privacy settings to shield some of their activities from their parents. Losing control online is more than a technology problem, it's a sociological turning point. For much of human history, personal information spread slowly, person to person, if at all. The Facebook era, however, makes it possible to disclose private matters to wide populations, intentionally or not. Personal worlds that previously could be partitioned, work, family, friendships, matters of sexuality, become harder to keep apart. One solution, staying off Facebook, has become harder to do as it reaches a billion people around the world. Facebook is committed to the principle of one identity for its users. It shut down accounts, multiple accounts of people who use pseudonyms in other multiple accounts, including those of dissidents and protesters in China and Egypt. The company says that its commitment to real names makes the site safer for users. It's also at the core of the service they sell to advertisers, namely access to the real you. Closeted gays and lesbians face particular challenge in controlling their images online, given that their friends, family, and enemies have the ability to expose them. So, I mean, I find that these two incidents are tied and related in that we don't have control over our internet anonymity should we choose to act anonymously on the internet. And I feel like we should have some sort of protections.
I feel, yeah, I mean, stepping back from this particular thing, I think there's sort of two almost contradictory lessons here. I mean, one is that I feel like only you can be responsible, or ultimately you are responsible for your anonymity and privacy online, yeah. Or actually just in general, and online or offline. I mean, ultimately, you cannot trust like a community. You cannot trust you have to essentially determine what you are comfortable having out there and what you are not comfortable having out there, and figure out how to do it. And it's, I mean, to some extent, I agree with Tom on that. Like, you know, with the
violence, this wasn't Gawker's fault. This is,
yeah,
this is Mr. Bruce's fault.
At the same time, I feel like there's another lesson, which is that you can't ultimately control it. Like, other yeah. people can out as much about you as mm-hmm. you know you can.
So watch your actions.
You know, and yeah. I agree with that, Tom.
Here's
however,
when
you
he have done as much good as he did without crossing some or walking some morally questionable lines to the majority of people. And here's the other big issue that no one's discussed. There is a law put in place that says you cannot publicly shame someone, just a random person on the side of the street, or your, let's say, the neighbor that you hate. You can't use your power and publicize that, like, you know, say they're an asshole that smells like pee all the time. You know, like, you can't just go say that.
Uh-huh.
And the one exception to that is, are they in the public eye? Do they merit being in the public eye? Andy, do you think that Mr. Bruce, as Violent Acres, you can say that he is not in the public eye, that he hasn't done enough to put himself into the public eye?
Well, you know, that's an interesting situation, because there, in the case of him and other Reddit users, there are people who are in the public eye, but only to the extent that of their online persona, as opposed to people who are in the public eye, who have a an unshielded identity, like celebrities, for example. You know who they are. None of them are hiding behind a username, but
yeah.
You've got a situation here.
Regardless of whether or not you actually publicize your name, if you are in the public eye, if you have done something to warrant being in the public eye, not like you catch a ball in the, you know, in the middle of a – no, actually, that's actually valid use. And this is like law. Like people actually wrote down – I don't remember the actual terms for it. But when you go, you know, and try to claim this defamation of character, you have to go through a I think it's a doctrine of whether it was, number one, first, malicious, like you were saying something about someone that was untrue. And if it is true, are they in the public eye? Because if they're in the public eye, and I don't think that there's a court of law out there that would not, you know, agree that Mr. Bruce has put himself in the public eye. Like he has done enough to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, to some extent, regardless of whether or not even he had, I think by the fact that he was publicized on Anderson Cooper on CNN kind of put him in the public eye already, right?
I think that he put himself in the public eye when he was a big bad mamma jamma on Reddit, walking the line. Like he was already in the public line. And you talk about a site like Reddit. Reddit is a huge community. It has got huge power. It has got this power to make the internet shake and black out over legislation. And it's very powerful. And you are walking the line of what is the most morally questionable for the entirety of this, you know, country.
Yeah.
You put yourself there. You know, you got the pimp hat trophy in your Reddit case, and you love talking about it. And you did Ask Me Anything, and you went to Reddit meetups, and you did the Drill Down podcast. You are in the public eye, buddy. I mean, like, you did it, whether Anderson Cooper talked to you about it or not. The only difference in why people care now, guess what? He's a real person now. Adrian Chen showed me that he's an actual person who did all of this. Before, it was just a troll. Because, you know, they tell you, don't worry about trolls. Trolls are annoying and awful. And a lot, for as many people that were outraged, where did all of that outrage go to? It went to Reddit. And do you think that Reddit's to blame? Well, now they've got to deal with this issue.
Here's a similar situation, and this is really the heart of what I'm trying to get at here, is that I think it's a matter of journalistic responsibility. And here is a prime example from another situation when WikiLeaks accepted a cache of emails from officers basically the secret a lot of military secrets, they got it from one particular source, and that was U.S. Army PFC Bradley Manning, and WikiLeaks held that information in check. They kept his name anonymous because to reveal that would be to jeopardize him.
Okay, but we're talking about two completely different things. We're talking about this powerful organization that up until now hasn't had the resources to keep itself in check other than to rely on morally questionable police officers like Violent Acres.
Mm-hmm.
Which Anderson Cooper at the time, Reddit still was kind of trying to find its place. They just got a CEO. They just started hiring more people and getting into their own. As far as most people knew, they were this unchecked shadow organization, and they were doing as much good as much bad. They were just like a bomb waiting to happen. And you got to shed some light into that. Like, I see where they're coming from. And, you know, he did, and I don't think there's a person on this earth that thinks, oh, we really did need a jailbreak bait subreddit. Reddit's a private organization. Okay. They can get rid
but
of it.
But this is regardless of his actions. We're just talking about the principle of maintaining anonymity and expecting
can't boil
that,
it down to that, though.
I really think you can. That's really what I'm trying to get at the heart of.
I mean, I'm telling you, if Bradley Manning is sacrificing things on a different level,
okay. But what I'm trying to say,
sacrifice is much different than Mr. Bruce's sacrifice. Bradley Manning's was a whistleblower.
Yes.
Okay. That's a whistleblower. Uh-huh. That's had something to do with a completely different organization. now you're talking about somebody who is inciting and looking at and saying. Now, Adrian Chen, you may look at it and you may say, he is doing all of this to ruin Reddit.
No, but no.
What he actually might have done is humanized Mr. Bruce to the point of which you can actually sympathize with why he was the way he was and why Reddit.
I'm
going to
call bullshit on that motivation.
Allowed,
I'm sorry.
The jailbreak subreddit to exist. But you would never have gotten that if you just stated a name and let Anderson Cooper complain about all of the bad things that happened on there.
Now, I call bullshit on the motivation. I think that that you get the full extent of who that person was from the article without ever having to mention his name, that the revealing his name was a way to bring the internet mob to his door. Which is the same as when Bradley Manning's name was revealed.
Andy, if he was going to do that, he wouldn't have had to, you know, like, he could have done it in four paragraphs.
You see what I'm saying? But how
was his draw.
Okay, but how do you do that?
Why would he have worked, like, why wouldn't he have done it in 500 articles instead of 5,000?
How do you do that and still maintain the illusion that you're not, that wasn't your intent?
Why do you?
I think he's fascinated by this person, and so that's why he's written so many paragraphs about him. But he also wants to take a personal involvement in stopping what he's doing. Which, you know, it's like I said, I'm not defending him in any way. I think he's. I don't have any. I'm not condoning what he's done. But I think he has a right to his anonymity, just as,
I agree
for
with
example,
you. And Reddit had no bearing on his identity being released. You know who had all the bearing on his identity being released? Mr.
Adrian
Bruce.
Chen. When he decided to take it in his responsibility to reveal it.
No, Mr. Bruce was careless with his identity.
Yes, but Adrian Chen decided to that he was going to reveal it. That
he broke no laws.
He had a journalistic
it's
responsibility
freedom of speech to go out and do this. And based upon what he did and how he did it, and for reasons why that may not be apparent right now, this is the truth. And I'm a journalist, Andy, so I can tell you, like, your word is your bond. It's the most valuable thing that you have as a journalist. As once it's tattered and broken, that you can't get it back.
Yeah.
And you saw how hard it is for Adrian Chen to do this, despite all of the ill will that Reddit has gotten on that. But I don't think there are many other publications who would be willing to do that and risk the ire of the internet. Gawker. None of them are.
Well,
as
they
big
weren't
whereas...
risking the ire of the internet. They're doing it for page views, and they got plenty of.
Think
page
about it
views.
Like this: what if the Atlantic had done it? The Atlantic cannot deal with the same kind of ire and hatred as Gawker. Gawker is going to make money no matter what. They are invincible to Reddit. Oh. They're probably one of the few organizations. If you cut off that faucet, and you've got everybody pissed off at them. They wouldn't even feel it. Yeah. So it's like you really have to look and say, okay, so they're not doing it because they're mad at Reddit.
No. I don't think
they're no matter what.
Right.
What's the motivation, Andy?
The motivation, you know, from I spoke to the source, and he claims the motivation is to ruin his life.
I don't buy it.
Well, I don't know. I honestly do think that it was probably I don't know ruin his life would be the something, but I mean essentially. Maybe the more charitable way of saying that he might say would be like to bring him into consequence with what he's done.
Yes.
Basically to connect his two lives and connect the consequences of the two. Right.
Yes.
That sounds far more reasonable.
No, I believe that that's exactly, I think that that's exactly, you're right,
me,
Chris, that's a charitable way of saying it.
Now that,
but the question
the
still remains.
Violent Acres would see it that way.
Now, granted, I mean, I don't deny that that probably would, in fact, ruin his life. That's not to say that it's right. not going to be a substantial negative consequence to his life. Andy, I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you feel that this, like, that Adrian's response and the morality of it is hinged at all upon the actual or technical legality of what Violent Acres was doing. Like, would this conversation change at all if Violent Acres was engaged in actually illegal activities? I mean, that's sort of a complicated question because there are actually illegal activities, you know, sponsored on Reddit, all the drug subreddits.
What
for
if
example.
It came out that he actually had felt up little girls?
Now, I think that.
I sort of wanted to avoid that one in particular because that's
an awful thing to think about.
Yeah. But I still feel like there is a sense in which, like, the technical versus actual legality of this sort of is important. Just like in a sense, like, you know, Adrian's sort of ability to free speech is this. I mean, the same thing that protects Violent Acres is the same thing that enables Adrian to make his comments and his publications too. Which is, you know, as you're talking, Tom, a sort of a different way of thinking about it. Anyway, sorry.
No, I think that's a really excellent point.
I think regardless of what the action is, whether it's a whistleblower or someone who runs a, you know, creepy website, that as a journalist, you have a responsibility of your actions. And when someone insists that they want to remain anonymous, that you should respect that. I mean, I think that's
I do think that that's true, but it's not like this guy was squeaky clean like Bradley Manning, and he was just trying to do nothing but public good. He did a lot of, like, really questionable things. He did a lot of things like we're focusing on just the keeping jailbait relatively clean, and, you know, whenever seeing a nude photo of an underage girl, snapping it, pulling it off, because that's illegal. Which he did do. I mean, we have Reddit on record saying that, and you know, him going on record saying, you know, it wasn't illegal. We didn't facilitate that, and I believe him, and that's why he got power at Reddit. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about, what about all the other things that he did, like pictures of dead kids and you know, the racist subreddits and you know, it's kind of one of those things.
So,
like,
but where
it's
does
funny because
it,
it's true, where, but it's like that's hateful and bad, and you're pulling out like all these people, and you're creating a community, even if you're originally creating it in jest.
Right, but where
it's
the question is that where do you start
at the end of it, because it gets, you cannot control it.
Here's the thing: is that he wasn't the only one who had sites like that. There are sites like Space Dicks, which I'm sure, I don't know if you're familiar with, Tom, but it's basically a Reddit version of 4chan's B. And there are some
here's the thing about it.
Gruesome...
4chan, if you want to compare Reddit to 4chan, it's also very different, because 4chan, a discussion is gone and there's no record left of it after the conversation flows through.
Right.
You have to keep talking about that thread or it goes away. So it's like, I'm not condoning it, but you're truly anonymous, and your awful crap doesn't get archived and pulled up later to be referenced in articles.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pull it off and save it yourself.
Well, they don't even have usernames.
Well, that's not the that's not the case.
So I'm like, I understand where it's coming from there, because it's like a stupid conversation, and it really, I mean, it's really what it is with Reddit, and they've always been about this at Reddit. They are creating communities around one or two topics. So it's like you're creating a community, man.
Sure. But I mean, in a case like Space Dicks, you have users who have usernames, and that stuff does stay on the site forever
and
ever.
They're going to have to be accountable if they ever, you know, if it ever gets out that was their doing.
Okay. All right. So
off of their own accord, so Reddit didn't participate. You know, maybe their best friend said, "Hey, I think you've gone too far, and I'm going to start blowing the whistle."
I see where you're coming from now. So I just wanted to see that you were on the same page with that. So essentially, the people like on SpaceX are just as responsible as one person, for example, Violent Acres is.
Everyone is responsible for what they put online, whether they're anonymous or not.
No, I know.
If you're putting something
that
anonymous online that you want to do to protect your family, then you have to weigh the consequences of, is this worth getting caught over? And I think Bradley Manning and others like him, whistleblowers who really just wanted to say, hey, look, there's no one's talking about this and no one knows about it, but it needs to be out in the public eye. I think they knew what they were getting into when they got in. It wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to create this website, you know, about hating Jews and, you know, because it's hilarious. And if someone finds out about it and it looks bad on my family, I don't think they link it that far, you know? So that's why I was like, you can't really look at Bradley Manning as a whistleblower and Violent Acres as somebody who are this, who are one in the same. You're looking at somebody who thought no one was looking at him, and so he did whatever the hell he wanted. And mind you, I do see a huge there's a lot of importance on keeping things anonymous. I'm not saying everybody has to have their name out in front and center, but I am saying that you're taking your own responsibility, whether it's anonymous or not, because if somebody finds out, you have to deal with the consequences. It's like, if Adrian Chen says it or not, it's on him. I mean, he shouldn't have been as careless and sloppy if it was that important. But, you know, a joking subreddit hating a particular, you know, culture or race or whatever the case may be, you're not inspired by that.
I just think that the basically the bottom line is I question Chen's ethics and his decisions.
Well, I think it makes everybody online, like the Space Sticks people, think twice about polluting the internet with a bunch of bad crap.
Well, but I think bad crap is a value judgment. And I think that some people would say that as bizarre but unique artistic expression.
Yeah. You know, yes, and if that's the case, I think those people would know how to keep those activity.
What I'm saying is that Chen made a value judgment as well.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Disagree with that?
Yeah, I disagree with.
Yeah, if I want to make sure that I'm understanding you properly, it sounds like you object primarily to Adrian's sort of choice about how he handled this, specifically relating to the sort of cross section between him as a presumably user of Reddit and also as a journalist, sort of like how he chose to combine the two. Mm-hmm. More than, I mean, like, it seems like you might not have had the same reaction if just some random person, or even if some other Reddit. I mean, Reddit has definitely doxed people before. There was the puppy dog killer doxing that happened 2 or 3 years
users
ago.
Users of Reddit, yeah. But those
I just want to make sure. Yeah. So it seems like your primary objection is sort of to Adrian's. I really apologize, Tom.
It's fine.
sort of decision of how he specifically handled it as a journalist.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that if it had been two users who, if it had been another user, Reddit user, who had doxed Violent Acres and Adrian Chen had just happened to report on that incident, I would not have a problem. It's the fact that I feel like he crossed the line between an objective observer reporting the facts and someone who is making the news.
Well, here's the thing, Andy. As I told you, he was already making the news anyway. But now and this is why it's really hard as someone on the outside. Like, I went to journalism school, and they tell you, it's like, look, you're gonna put a name to your anonymous source. You're gonna put a name to whoever you're outing. You need to back it up with facts. You need to make sure that it's true, and you need to put enough into it so that it's not just throwing it against the wall. Like he did. He didn't do that with his article. He really put it out. Now let's talk about like 9 months into the future. Reddit is going to be very cautious about who it lets into its inner circle in terms of unpaid.
Certainly,
moderators.
And that's Reddit's. But I think all of that is Reddit's own business, how they handle that. And I think
what set it off? What pushed it forward?
I'm saying even before the Chen article, Reddit was handling their own situation internally. Like, they had already banned the jailbait subreddit. They were already controlling their own subreddits. So I don't know why
started but now they're definitely not. It's
absolutely
in the public
eye.
No one will ever forget.
They had banned Jailbait. They had banned Creepshots. And this is all before the Chen article. They were doing what they needed to control their environment. So I just found it unnecessary for Chen to.
Did you also object to Anderson Cooper's sort of? I don't know. I don't remember exactly what he did.
Now this might be interesting. You guys don't know. Mr. Bruce is going to be doing the.
He's going to be doing
Anderson
the CNN
Cooper show tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. I mean, for what it's worth, it'd be interesting to hear his side of the story.
You know what the truly unfortunate piece about all of this is that, number one, I think it's just, it's going to be a drag-out fight. Number two, I think Adrian Tran and Gawker knew this going into it. I think they know every time that they're going to publish something controversial, and they're prepared. Reddit's going to get dragged through the mud on this one.
Yeah.
They're going to say, why did you let this guy exist? Why did you let him
go this far?
Why did you give him power?
Those are all valid questions, but those are the questions that should be asked, not individually outing somebody's identity. I think that that definitely Reddit should be taken to task as to why they allowed someone with such questionable morals.
I tried to say that. Did you read the same article I wrote?
Yeah, of course. No, I think that you were...
Because I remember, 2008, which was when he started gaining a lot of power.
Absolutely.
That was
you were asking
time in Reddit's history.
I think you were asking all the right questions. You were bringing up all the right points with your article. I think that, like I said, I think that Adrian Chen chose to focus on the wrong sort of issue, and he made it sort of a personal vendetta, it felt.
It remains to be seen if he wants to make Reddit accountable. He wants to make – and honestly, Reddit's going to have to. It's going to have to come out. And they've come out and said it before. And what I hate about it is, do you really think that, Violent Acres, Mr. Bruce, is a good spokesperson to talk about Reddit and their interests? And he's basically going to air out all this dirty laundry and – there's no filter, and then Reddit's going to have to come back and do cleanup.
That is one thing I find to be very sort of unfortunate about this. I mean, I don't know. I think the default subreddits are ridiculously terrible, and I've unsubscribed from all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's where I get some of my best content on a daily basis, and some of the most sort of uplifting and interesting and fascinating culture. I think it's very unfortunate that this is what Reddit is going to get known for rather than, the largest secret Santa in history or, some of the other things that they've done.
Well, I think it's also...
It's always the bad stuff. But, I mean, it's more than anything, you've got the scum of the earth, the anti-hero, if you will, of internet justice for Reddit going on. Dude who has admitted to going down on his 19-year-old stepdaughter and calling it awesome. This dude's going to go on Anderson Cooper and talk about Reddit. Do we really want that to be how some people are introduced to Reddit?
Well,
is introduced to Reddit? No.
I mean, it's just wow, it's so much more than that. Guess what we're going to get?
I think the bottom line is I appreciate the Reddit community, and I appreciate the fact that there is such diversity that you can have, ugliness amongst the best, most charitable aspects of the site, and they can coexist, and they coexist primarily because of that internet anonymity that they protect. And I would hate to see that dynamic ruined on the site. Anything else that you guys want to...
No, I think this was a really good conversation, Andy. It was kind of surprising to hear your point. It was good to hear your side of the story, and good to hear Chris chime in with the middle ground.
Yeah, I sort of feel like sort of being neither a journalist nor a very good Redditor, I more want to be a voice of perspective than mm-hmm. anything else.
I think we adequately drilled into
drilled down.
Excuse me.
This topic has been thoroughly down-drilled.
Anything else you want to
yes, I like that.
Mention about the Wall Street Journal article about the Facebook, the inadvertent Facebook outing before we close off the show?
I guess one of my closing things I'd like to say is just stepping back. One thing I've been thinking an awful lot about the last few years, and even more so with working on Group Tie now, is the relationship between the so-called virtual world and the so-called real world. Mm-hmm. And I sort of almost object to even calling it the virtual world, because I feel like it is the world, and the most power and good that comes out of the internet comes out of thinking about it that way rather than thinking about it separately. And I think both this thing and the Facebook thing and I don't know, just it's interesting to sort of see the way that, you know, it used to be a bunch of guys in our basements, you know, talking late at night, has become an integral part of society.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing to keep in mind about the internet is because it's so big and it's so connected, the effect of any one action is usually zero but can be essentially infinite.
Sure.
And I think that's a very important thing to sort of keep in mind as we interact on the internet and as we work on it. I don't know exactly how it's going to affect our society going forward. Only anybody does, but it's certainly going to change how society thinks about itself. So yeah. Anyway, that's my final word.
All right. Let me start with our guest here. Tom, where can we find your work on the internet when you're not here on Showdown?
You can find me over at VentureBeat.com.
All right. Plain and simple. Chris, how about yourself? Where can we find you on the internet when you're not here on the Drill Down?
You can find me tweeting at CRISPRNOR, CRISBURNOR. And then I blog at CRISPRNOR.com. And then every Monday and Friday, I co-curate a newsletter at Startup Digest on the best startup-related articles and events, at least the events in Silicon Valley. And we are in something like 200 cities worldwide, so there's probably one in your city too.
All right. As for myself, you can find me at MrBabyMan.com, Twitter.com/MrBabyMan, Facebook.com/MrBabyMan. All the basically, if you Google my internet handle rather than my real name, you'll find most of my links out there. I don't know. You probably won't find much if you Google my real name. You can check out past episodes of The Drill Down as well as other fine shows in the Geeks of Doom podcast network on geeksofdoom.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Go to geeksofdoom.com. And if you go into the upper right-hand sidebar, our iTunes link is there. Our show is on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices. Facebook.com/TheDrillDown, Twitter.com/TheDrillDown. If you've got an idea for a story you think we should be talking about, tweet us or email us at comments@thedrilldown.com. We'd love to hear your comments on this, too. I mean, you can go to geeksofdoom.com and post a comment in our thread, show notes thread. I'd love to hear your take on this divisive, highly controversial situation. If you've got a viewpoint on any of the stories we've talked about or any issue that pertains to technology, social media, or geek culture, send that story to submissions@thedrilldown.com. for us to publish on the site. Let the Drill Down podcast help you reach the targeted tech-savvy market of influencers and outliers that is our wonderful audience by writing to us at sales@thedrilldown.com for details. That's it for this episode of The Drill Down. Thanks for joining us.